So welcome to the Bhakti Shastri third semester. We completed chapter 10 and then we'll do chapter 11 today. But before we go, so in the 10th chapter, Arjuna asked Krishna, so how can I think of you? And Krishna listed his opulences. In the 11th chapter, Arjuna asks Krishna to show his universal form, to see how he is pervaded. Excuse me. How he is pervaded through his entire creation. And let's do something different. Let's turn to the 11th chapter, 55th verse. The reason is that we get a synopsis of... this is on page 540. Because when we read this particular paragraph and we go through the reading, then we get the gist of what Prabhupada is saying. So 540, the last paragraph. In summary, the universal form of Krishna, which is a temporary manifestation, and the form of time, which devours everything, and even the form of Vishnu, four-handed, have been all exhibited by Krishna. Thus Krishna is the origin of all manifestations. It is not that Krishna is a manifestation of the original Vishwarupa or Vishnu. Krishna is the origin of all the forms. There are hundreds and thousands of Vishnus, but for a devotee, no form of Krishna is important than but the original form, the two-handed Shyam Sundar. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that those who are attached to the Shyam Sundar form of Krishna in love and devotion can see him always within the heart and cannot see anything else. One should understand, therefore, the purport of the 11th chapter is that the form of Krishna is essential and supreme. So Srila Prabhupada very nicely summarizes the whole chapter and the theme of that chapter in that paragraph. So when we read this and when we read the chapter, then we'll get the gist of what exactly the flow is, what is the sequence, what is Srila Prabhupada trying to teach us from this chapter and the verses of Gita.
So Prabhuji, this summary answers last week's question, or last class question, where somebody asked, is the four-handed form of Vishnu the original form? Or the two-handed form of Krishna is original form.
Right.
I think this summary from Prabhupada answers that question very well.
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you. Shailesh, Prabhu had a question. The mic is right here, Prabhu.
So, when Krishna was born, he exhibited the four-arm form of Vishnu. Right. I was thinking why he did not give the Shyam Sundar form.
Well, we had the same question in the Wednesday class. Because in the Bhagavatam it says that the original personality of Godhead, the four-handed form of Vishnu, appeared before Devaki and Mother Yashoda. The answer to that is that there is no difference in one sense between Krishna and Vishnu. They are one and the same. So, Deepar Chirevahi Dashantaram Abhyupetya, that one candle lights another candle. So, after the candles are lit, how can one tell, unless one knows which is the original candle, if all the candles are original candles. There is the power, the effulgence, everything is the same. So, similarly, there is no difference between Vishnu and Krishna. But, Rupa Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami says in Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that the form of Krishna is superior because he can exchange rasas. And in the case of Krishna's birth in the dungeons of Kamsa, King Kamsa, he appeared as four-handed form because Devaki and Vasudev, they were worshipping Krishna in the Aishwarya or in the mood of opulence, awe and reverence. So Krishna showed them that particular form. But his original form is Shyam Sundar. And also in one of the purports, when we come read this, then Srila Prabhupada very detailedly he explains the difference, and he will tell you like what is 400. Everything is clearly explained. So when we come to the purports, we'll read that also a little bit. Okay. So chapter 11, page 489. Arjuna Vacha Mad Anugrahaya Paramam Guhyam Adhyatma Samgnitam Yat Tvayoktam Vachastena Mohoyam Vigato Mama. Arjuna said, by hearing the instructions you have kindly given me about these most confidential spiritual subjects, my illusion has been now dispelled. Text 2. Bhavapayayau hi bhutanam shrutau vistarasho maya tvattaha kamalapatraksha mahatmyam api chavayam. O lotus-eyed one, I heard from you in detail about the appearance and disappearance of every living entity and have realized your inexhaustible glories. Here Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, if you see, that Krishna in the previous chapter, he says, aham in the third line, aham krishnasya jagataha prabhava pralayastatha. In the seventh chapter, Krishna says that I am the source and the appearance and disappearance of everything. That's why Arjuna repeats the same thing, that I have completely understood, I am convinced that you are the person, who you are the cause of appearance and disappearance of everyone. Third, evam etad yatha tathat yatata tvam atmanam parameshvara drashtum icchami te rupam aishwaram purushottama. O greatest of all personalities, O supreme form, though I see you here before me in your actual position, as you have described yourself, I wish to see how you have entered into the cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form of yours. Next verse. 4. Manyase yad tat chakyam maya drashtum iti prabho yogeshwara tato metvam darshayatmanam avyayam. If you think that I am able to behold your cosmic form, O my Lord, O Master of all mystic power, then kindly show me that unlimited universal self. Here, two things. Arjuna says, I am convinced, but I want to see that form of yours, by which you pervade through the entire universe. Now the question will be asked here. Is that Arjuna was seeing the two-handed form of Shyamasundara Krishna right there in the battlefield, and that's the ultimate form of the Lord? Why can't he see a form which is just but a partial expansion of Krishna? The crude analogy is, if you can see the president, why can't you see some secretary who is, you are having very, very powerful connections with president and you can see him as it is anytime. Why can't you see a secretary who is but a partial expansion of president? Why do you need special eyes? Is it like that universal form is much bigger, much better, much rarer to see than Krishna himself? That's a doubt one can raise. Here the answer is that the devotees of Krishna, they behold Krishna in a particular form, and that is the form they like to see, they love to see. They are completely in their original position. Again, this is a very important point. We'll come back later when Arjuna offers his prayers to this. So they like to see the form of the Lord according to their contemplation, and they can't see anything else. For example, Krishna, he left gopis in the Rasa Leela and he disappeared from the scene of Rasa dance. And gopis were aghast, were drowning an ocean of lamentation looking for Krishna. They were like searching furiously for Krishna. Now, they were going and asking every creeper, every animal, every tree in Vrindavan, have you seen Krishna? Have you seen Krishna? And Krishna wanted to play a trick on him, a trick on the gopis. So what he did was, he converted himself into the four-armed Narayan form. And he was there. And then the gopis were passing. Here is Lord Vishnu, who even the great sages can't see by their dint of meditation. Now the gopis, they said, oh, you are Narayan, please let us re-offer our obeisances to you. And after offering obeisances to the Lord Narayan, you know what is the question they asked? Where is Krishna? Have you seen Krishna pass? So Narayan to them is a source or a guide or a person, a common person who is supposed to tell them where Krishna went. So that is the mood of gopis. And that is the mood Arjuna had also with Krishna, because he was in the Sakya Rasa. And therefore, he couldn't think of anything else. Therefore, Krishna had to give him special vision to show him that universal form. And also, as we learn later, the universal form is so powerful that nobody can just see it just like that. And there are reasons for that. So we'll get into that. So 3 and 4, they ask, they kind of, yes, Prabhuji, 3 and 4 is Krishna's, Arjuna's request to Krishna. Yes.
Sir, Prabhuji, I have a doubt here. So Arjuna requests Krishna to, you know, see him in the universal form. And Krishna says, you cannot see me in the universal form with your ordinary eyes, material eyes. You have to be given spiritual eyes. But at the same time, Sanjaya is relating all this to Dhritarashtra.
Mm.
And how was he able to see the universal form? Because he also describes to Dhritarashtra what Arjuna was seeing and what Arjuna was, saying to, to Krishna in the universal form.
Wonderful, wonderful question. We'll get to the answer when we come to the verse number 12. Wonderful question. Thank you. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, text 5 on page 492. Pashya me partha rupani shatashotha sahasrasaha nana vidhani divyani nana varna kritinicha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, O son of Pritha, see now my opulences, hundreds of thousands of varied and divine and multicolored forms. Text 6. Pashya dityan vasun rudran ashvinav marutas tatha bahuni adrishta purvani pashyascharyani bharata. O best of the Bharatas, see here the different manifestations of Adityas, Vasus, Rudras, Ashwini Kumaras, and other demigods. Behold the many wonderful things which no one has ever seen or heard of before. Text 7. Ihai kastam jagat krishnam pashyadya sa characharam mama dehe gudakesha yachanya drashtum ichasi. O Arjuna, whatever you wish to see, behold at once in this body of mine. This universal form can show you whatever you now desire to see and whatever you may want to see in the future. Everything moving and non-moving is here completely in one place. Text 8. Natumam shakyase drashtum ane naiva svachakshusha divyam dadami te chakshuhu pashyame yogamaishwaryam. But you cannot see me with your present eyes. Therefore I give you divine eyes. Behold my mystic opulence. So here Krishna is giving an introduction to his form before he actually is revealing to it. He gives a sneak preview of his form about him, and then in the next verses he kind of goes and gives the actual vision to Arjuna. Text 9 on page 496. Sanjaya uvacha eva muktva tato rajan maha yogeshwaro harihi darshayam ashapathaya paramam rupam aishwaram aneka vaktranayanam aneka adbhuta darshanam aneka divyabharanam divyaneko dhyatayudam divyamalyambaradharam divyagandhanulepanam sarvascharyamayam devam anantam vishvatomukham. Arjuna saw in that universal form unlimited mouths, unlimited eyes, unlimited wonderful visions. The form was decorated with many celestial ornaments and bore many divine appraised weapons. He wore celestial garlands and garments, and many divine scents were smeared all over his body. All was wondrous, brilliant, unlimited, and all-pervading. Text 12. Divi Surya Sahasrasya Bhaved Yugapad Uttita Yadi Bha Sadrishi Sasyad Bhashastasya Mahatmanaha. If hundreds of thousands of suns were to rise at once into the sky, their radiance might resemble the effulgence of the Supreme Person in that universal form. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When what Arjuna saw was indescribable, yet Sanjaya is trying to give a mental picture of that great revelation to Dhritarashtra. Neither Sanjaya nor Dhritarashtra was present, but Sanjaya, by the grace of Vyas, could see what was happening. Thus, he now compares the situation, as far as it can be understood, to be an imaginable phenomenon. Example, thousands of suns.
No, Prabhuji, I understand. I know that at the beginning of the Mahabharata, Vyasadeva had actually given Sanjaya the divine vision to actually see the happenings on the battlefield.
Mm.
You know, so he already could see the battlefield. But the question I have had was, Krishna specifically tells Arjuna that you cannot see my universal form with your current eyes. So I'll have to give you divine eyes.
Mm.
So the implication here is Krishna bestows upon Arjuna the divine eyes. But does it imply that he also gave divine eyes to Vyasa and Sanjaya and all the other sages or the demigods who were observing the battle on the that was about to happen?
Well, to the answer, second part of your question, yes, the demigods were also able to see the universal form of God. It's clearly mentioned in the purport. Now, when I read through this chapter, I was not 100% clear if Sanjaya obtained a vision which is exactly like that of Arjuna, or was he able to grasp a little bit of what was happening by grace of Vyasadeva in a secondary fashion. That I am not sure. But based on this purport, it is that it is neither here nor there. I mean, it's neither 100% confirmed that Sanjaya had divine vision, or he had no vision. If he had no vision, then he couldn't explain all the things he was explaining. And if he had vision, then that fact that only Arjuna could see is false. So I don't have a decisive answer. Even I was struck with the same question when I was reading this chapter, but I don't have a decisive answer based on the purports. We can do more research into it to see. Was Sanjaya's position? Was he also seeing the same thing? I don't know. Yes, Mataji.
You're saying that in 10:11 he seems to be describing what Arjuna is seeing.
Right.
So he has to see that as well.
Well, it said Arjuna saw in the universal form, but how did Sanjaya know what he was seeing was the question here. Did Sanjaya have... So our bottom line is that by grace of Vyasadeva, he could understand what Sanjaya, what Arjuna was seeing, or what Arjuna was experiencing. He did not have eyes of his own, because it's clearly said that nobody in further verses says that nobody has seen this form before. And Arjuna himself says, I have not seen this form before. So we can understand that by grace of Vyasadeva, Sanjaya is able to understand what Krishna is seeing without he himself seeing it. He was having that experience. That is the conclusion that can be drawn from these verses. In absence of a very... yes, Shailesh had something to say. Right. Dhritarashtra. So I don't have a 100% clear, crystal clear answer that this is what it is. Correct. Correct. Well, Vyasadeva was an empowered incarnation of Krishna, and the demigods were on a higher category than the jivas, which were on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So, if that was the argument, then Arjuna, being a close associate of the Lord, need not need a divine vision to see that form of the Lord. So, which in turn says that Sanjaya also has no need, and he was able to see. Therein lies the catch-22 situation. I'll see if I can get a better answer based on the writings of our previous acharyas to see exactly if Sanjaya was seeing or he was just describing what Arjuna was feeling because he had mercy of Vyasadev. Yes, Mataji, and then Sri Govinda Dutta Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hey, very well. Yeah.
I was wondering, Prabhu, that are there different kinds of universal forms?
Well, we have two as far as the chapter goes. Hare Krishna. We have two as far as the chapter goes. One universal form was when Krishna revealed, when he went to Hastinapur to broker peace on behalf of. Universal form was when he showed to Arjuna. But this universal form is a very, very powerful form, brilliantly effulgent, and it has time factor in it that nobody has seen.
Okay.
What he showed to Duryodhana was a more of a universal form with no time factor, with no opulences, with no divine radiance or nothing.
So I was just thinking that Arjuna was a surrendered soul. Now what he saw, probably even the demigods were not able to see. So I'm just thinking, is it directly proportional to the amount of the surrender you have and what you have to see? Krishna will just reveal that much.
I have a question for your question, because the demigods were able to see.
Yeah, so but what they saw may not have been the same as Arjuna?
Well, that, Mataji, goes more into like speculation field. At this point, we don't know for sure what they exactly saw. Thank you, Mataji. Because what they saw was they were scared. When they saw the universal form, Hare Krishna. When they saw the universal form, they were scared. The demigods were like really shaking, thinking that there is some devastation. So,
Arjuna was a devotee already. So he, but he didn't have the eyes, divine eyes to see. And later on, Krishna gave the divine eyes to see. Right? So he was a devotee already, but still he could not see it unless Krishna gave the divine eyes. So the point I'm making is. About the surrender.
Yeah, I just realized that actually devotees probably don't even want to see the universal form.
Yes, yes. That is based on that. Yes, Sri Govindadatta Prabhu.
In the end of Bhagavad Gita, there's something directly.
Page
758.
758. Okay. Yes, Prabhuji.
It's just, I mean, it's not answering the question, but it's something more adding here. Vyas Prasadat. By mercy of Vyad, I have heard these most confidential talks directly from Master of Mysteries in Krishna, who are speaking personally to Arjuna. And before that, Sanjaya said that, thus I have heard the conversation of two great souls, Krishna and Arjuna, and so wonderful is that message that my hair is standing on it. So, I mean, we can see, like, definitely he's hearing. Like, not sure if seeing, I'm not sure, like, but... definitely is hearing. So when the universal form is there, the Arjuna must be offering prayers.
Right.
And there's a link.
Nice. Thank you. That's a nice point.
Where the demigods are seeing, where do we confirm that? I still have to...
We'll go. As we go, we'll get into it. Yes.
Maybe this is the last comment I want to make, but in the Mahabharata, Sanjaya was describing the events of the battle step by step to Dhritarashtra, after the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. So he wasn't just simply hearing what was the conversation between Arjuna and Krishna. He was actually able to visualize the entire battlefield and describe to Dhritarashtra exactly what was happening. So I mean, based on all the points you've already made, I think Sanjaya had, not, could he not only see, but he was able to also hear the conversations. So the only question now is, was he given divine eyes to also behold the universal form of Sri Krishna, in his universal form? Or was it something that he was just trying to describe based on what Arjuna was seeing and what Arjuna was describing?
Well, we'll get an answer to that, hopefully. Text 13 on page 497, the last. Tatraikastam jagat kritsnam pravibhaktam anekada apashya deva devasya sharire pandavastada. At that time, Arjuna could see in the universal form of the Lord the unlimited expansions of the universe situated in one place, although divided into many, many thousands. Text 14. Tataha sa vishmaya vishto shrishta roma dhananjayaha pranamya sirashi devam kritanjalir abhasataha. Then bewildered and astonished, his hair standing on end, Arjuna bowed his head to offer obeisances and with folded hands began to pray to the Supreme Lord. So this is the one section of the verses wherein Krishna revealing his form and Arjuna's reaction, first reaction to that form. And the next 15 through 30 verses is beautiful prayers by Arjuna to the universal form of the Supreme Lord. Arjuna vacha, Pashyami devam stava deva dehe sarvam sata bhuta vishesha sanghan brahmanamisham kamalasanastham rishimscha sarvanurugamscha divyan. Arjuna said, my dear Lord Krishna, I see assembled in your body all the demigods and various other living entities. I see Brahma sitting on the lotus flower, as well as Lord Shiva and all the sages and divine serpents. Aneka bahudha ravaktra netram pashyami tvam sarvato nantarupam nantam cha madhyam napunastavadim pashyami visveshvara vishvarupa. O Lord of the universe, O universal form, I see in your body many, many arms, bellies, mouths and eyes expanded everywhere without limit. I see in you no end, no middle and no beginning. Kiritinam gadinam chakrinam cha tejo rashim sarvato deeptimantam pashyamitvam dur niriksham samantad deeptalankarka dyutim aprameyam. Your form is difficult to see because of its glaring effulgence, spreading on all sides like blazing fire or the immeasurable radiance of the sun. Yet I see this glowing form everywhere, adorned with various crowns, clubs and discs. Tvamaksharam paramam, tvamaksharam paramam veditavyam, tvamasya vishvasya param nidhanam, tvamavyaya shashvata dharma gopta, sanatanastvam purusho matome. You are the supreme primal object. You are the supreme primal objective. You are the ultimate resting place of this universe. You are inexhaustible and you are the oldest. You are the maintainer of eternal religion, the personality of Godhead. This is my opinion. Anadimadyanta manantaviryam anantabahum sashisuryanetram pashyamitvam deeptahutashavaktram svatejasa vishvamidam tapantam. You are without origin, middle or end. Your glory is unlimited. You have numberless arms and the sun, moon are your eyes. I see you with blazing fire coming forth from your mouth, burning this entire universe by your own radiance. So, here in text 16, on page 500, Arjuna says, I see in you no end, no middle, and no beginning. And he repeats that the same thing on text 19, on page 502. You are without origin, middle, or end. So that particular phrase is repeated. There is a question on that in the homework. So just a heads up. Dvaya prithivyo idamantaram hi vyaptam tvayaikena dishascha sarva drishtavadbutam rupamugram tavedam lokatrayam pravyatitam mahatman. Although you are one, you spread throughout the sky and the planets and all space in between. O great one, seeing this wondrous and terrible form, all the planetary systems are perturbed. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Dvaya prithivyo, the space between heaven and earth, and lokatrayam, the three worlds, are significant words in this verse because it appears that not only did Arjuna see this universal form of the Lord, but others in other planetary systems saw it also. Arjuna's seeing of the universal form was not a dream. All whom the Lord endowed with divine vision saw that universal form on the battlefield. So it's more of an expansion on demigods also seeing. And it seems the Lord did endow many other people with the power to see that divine vision. Yes. Again, we come back to the same question. That we don't know. See, the thing is, unless Prabhupada specifically writes, we cannot assume one way or other. That will be assumption. So we need hard evidence that there is there in writings of Acharyas that that is the fact. Well, but in the purport, Prabhupada is limiting only to demigods. So we can't take it out of context and apply it to Sanjaya. That was my point. Text 21. Anyway, if somebody wants to do research on that, I'll be more than happy to actually get an answer to that. Text 21. Ami hitvam surasanga vishanti kechid bhita pranjalyo grinanti svastityuktva maharshi siddha sangaha stuvanti tvam stutibhi pushkalabhi. All the hosts of the demigods are surrendering before you and entering into you. Some of them, very much afraid, are offering prayers with folded hands. Hosts of great sages and perfected beings are crying all peace and are praying to you by singing the Vedic hymns. Rudra Ditya Vashavo Hiyecha Sadhya Vishveshvino Marutas Choshma Pascha Gandharva Yaksha Shura Siddha Sangha Vikshante Tvam Vishmitas Chaiva Sarve. All the various manifestations of Lord Shiva, the Adityas, the Vasus, the Sadhyas, the Vishvedevas, the two Ashvis, the Maruts, and the forefathers, the Gandharvas, the Yakshas, the Asuras, and the perfected demigods are all beholding you in wonder. Rupam mahatte bahuvaktra netram mahabaho bahubahurapadam bahudaram bahudamstrakaralam drishtva loka pravyatitastataham. O mighty armed one, all the planets with their demigods are disturbed at seeing your great form with its many faces, eyes, arms, thighs, legs and bellies, and your many terrible teeth, as they are disturbed, so am I. Nabas prasham deepta maneka varnam vyattatanam deepta vishala netram drishtvahitvam pravyatitantaratma dritim navindami samam cha Vishnu. O all pervading Vishnu, seeing you with many radiant colors touching the sky, your gaping mouths and your great glowing eyes, my mind is perturbed with fear. I no longer can maintain my steadiness or equilibrium of my mind. Damstra karalani chate mukhani drishtvaiva kalanala sannibhani disho na jane na labhe cha sharma prasida devesha jagannivasa. O Lord of Lords, O Refuge of the Worlds, please be gracious to me. I cannot keep my balance seeing your blazing death-like faces and awful teeth. In all directions, I am bewildered. Ami chatvam dhratarashtrasya putra sarve sahaivavanipala sanghai bhishmo drona suta putrastatasau sahasmadiyair apiyoda mukhyai vaktrani te tvaram manavishanti damstra karalani bhayanakani kechidvilagna dashantareshu sandrishyante churnitair uttamangai. All the sons of Dhritarashtra, along with their allied kings and Bhishma, Drona and Karna, and our chief soldiers are also rushing into your fearful mouths, and some I see trapped with the heads smashed between your teeth. Yatha nadinam bahavo mbuvega samudrameva bhimukadravanti tata tavami naraloka vira vishanti vaktrani abhivijvalanti. As many waves of rivers flow into the mouth, so do all these great warriors enter blazing into your mouths. Yata pradiptam jvalanam patanga vishanti nashaya samruddha vega tataiva nashaya vishanti lokas tavapi vaktrani samruddhi vega. I see all people rushing full speed into your mouth as moths dash to destruction in a blazing fire. Here, there are two examples of how people are rushing into the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the previous verse, it is said as all the rivers are flowing into the ocean. And here it is said that as all the moths are just rushing into the flame. And it is said that for the devotees of the Lord, because on the battlefield, there were both kinds of soldiers. Those who were on the side of the Lord and who were the devotees of the Lord, and those who were on the opposite side of the Lord. As the water of the river which merges into the ocean is not destroyed, but the flames, the moths which rush into the flames are destroyed. Similarly, some are destroyed but some are not destroyed based on their inclination. That's what it is said, that there are two reasons why we have two different kinds of examples. Thank you, Mataji. Thank you. I'm not yet done. Thank you. Text 30. Also, I think in the previous verse, all sons of Dhritarashtra, and this is text 26 and 27, Bhishma is also mentioned. And now, Lord is a Mahajan. Srila Prabhupada writes in one of the examples why Bhishma is also included in that particular category. Interested to know? Yeah, let's do it. Text 30.
Leli hyase gra samana samantal lokan samagran vadanair jvaladbihi Tejo birapurya jagat samagram bashastavo gra pratapanti Vishnu. O Vishnu, I see you devouring all the people from all sides with your flaming mouths, covering all the universe with your effulgence. You are manifest with terrible scorching rays.
Akhya himeko bhavanugra rupo namostute te deva vara prasida. Vignatum ichchami bhavantamadyam nahi prajanami tava pravrittim.
O Lord of Lords, so fierce of form, please tell me who you are. I offer my obeisances unto you. Please be gracious to me. You are the primal Lord. I want to know about you, for I do not know what your mission is. So till this point, Arjuna, he offers prayers, but he is bewildered. You are exhibiting such powerful, it's like in horror movies, it seemed to be like comedies compared to the horror which is happening here on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. You can see that, you know, people are just rushing into the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you should imagine how many people were killed in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. It is the largest destruction of human soldiers ever in the history. Millions and millions of soldiers were killed within a span of 18 days. So you can see everybody is just rushing into the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as Arjuna says, some of the heads of the soldiers were stuck in between the teeth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not the sight for a faint of heart. So that is Krishna. He's all powerful. He's all, you know, most potent form of the Lord. Any questions so far on prayers to Arjuna? Prayers to the universal form?
Yes, you have a question, and after that, Shailesh Prabhu had a comment or question.
An allegorical representation, or is it really how the bad guys get killed?
If I understand your question, is that like just some sort of a visual picture of how that's happening, or is it actually the devotees?
Actually, what is so at that point they are not yet killed, but the
right. Good question. Because Krishna says when he gave the introduction to his universal form, you will see everything, including the future. So this is the beauty of the universal form of the Lord, that the time is something you cannot see in future at one place. Everything is happening at one place, including the time, space, and everything is there within the universal form of the Supreme Lord. You could see the past, present, and future in that form. So Arjuna could see what was the future fate which was awaiting those soldiers who were standing on the battlefield. And Krishna says also the reasons that I have put them to death. You are just an instrument. We'll come to that verse, Savya Sachin. And Mataji, if you do, kindly wait for 1 minute. Shailesh Prabhu had... No? Here? Okay. Mataji had a point.
Hare Krishna,
Mataji.
So why is the universal form so intimidating? As in, you know, instead of feeling... It's mostly like Arjuna is feeling very... he's actually scared and he's fearful and... It's not able to tolerate the scenic view that the universal form is being shown as. So why is it projected as a very... Is it only to project Lord Krishna as the most powerful man, but it can also be not scary, right? I mean...
Okay.
It's like you look at somebody who's very powerful instead of feeling very elated. You know, we are actually scared and fearful. So why is that given more importance here, or is it just the future that's being stated? Or
very excellent question. In the first few verses, why is the universal form being shown? In the first few verses to the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that the Lord has the power to show the universal form. There are many incarnations, or there are many so-called incarnations who are like cheaply say that they are God, and it's pretty prevalent in India, but nobody can show their universal form. And to dispel the notion, because Arjuna was convinced he need not see the universal form. In fact, the way it unfolds the chapter is, my Lord, thank you, I've seen your universal form. I'm shaking in my boots. Please, I want to see your regular form. That is the reaction to Arjuna after seeing the universal form. So, but to be convincing others who are not having that complete faith that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, Arjuna asked him to show his universal form so that others may know that when you come as incarnation, you have that capacity to show the universal form. That's the first answer to the question. The second thing is... Assume you are, again, let's take a crude example. We don't want to take, assume you are a president, you are a friend of the president of the United States. He comes to your house, you give him snacks, you talk to him, you joke with him. Probably, you know, your husband goes and plays a game of tennis with him or poker with him or whatever. They go out like, you know, hiking together or whatever. It's friend. And so the same president of the United States, one day he comes to your house. But he just has about 1 square mile of army around him. He has the latest, you know, fortunately you can't get aircraft carriers into your home, but you have everything else. You have this whole apartment complex is completely with soldiers and powerful. You will be scared. Yes? You have these guns and fiery looking people and ready to come and, you know, don't know what's going to happen. Now, if a mere ordinary president of the United States can have that much power, what should be the powerful feature of the Supreme Lord with millions of mouths and with appraised weapons and with fiery flames throwing out of the mouth? People will be scared. And we were discussing earlier also, before a few of you came, as to why Arjuna needed special vision to see Krishna. And when the devotees hold the form of the Supreme Lord as one form,
then you are not accustomed to seeing other form. You just, your natural position is to serve the form of the Lord. You have it in the heart. For example, Hanuman, his form is always Lord Ramchandra. He doesn't be even for a minute think of any other form as Supreme Lord. And he beholds that form as his all in all. He doesn't want to serve any other form. And similarly, Arjuna also saw Krishna as his friend, and that's what he wanted to see. And when he saw this universal form, he was scared. Oh, my friend, I want to be having the normal relationship with you. This is like terrible form. I don't want it. Same like president coming to your house with like soldiers and aircrafts, aircraft carriers and weapons and, you know, huge things, destruct nuclear missiles and everything ready to blow up this whole California state. You don't want to see that power. You know, okay, come here and have some snacks, eat, you know, we'll play some whatever you need to, and then you go. So that's how the devotees said. That's why he was scared. It's not pleasant. The form was really terrible. And even it is said in the verses that demigods also were like shaking their boots, seeing this form of the Lord. Please, peace, 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 let there be peace. You're sorry, please, please, please. That was the attitude of demigods. A little dramatic though, but I don't think that's true.
One comment, Prabhu.
Yes.
So, in Russia, I think there were some...
demigods? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to...
Yeah, so there were some, you know, Christian missionaries who were actually talking negatively about Hinduism as a whole. So they were referring to some of the verses in this chapter, and then they were saying, like, see, your God is so scary, and this is not how, any sane person should be worshipping. So they were taking this in a derogatory way. No. So it's very easy to, you know, I mean, taking it in the right context is very important, because otherwise it could be misleading.
Misleading to whom?
Misleading to, you know, if you don't have the right understanding, you cannot tell others that this is in a specific context.
And okay. Yeah. Point well noted. And Bhanu had a comment. He was smiling all the way through the bank. So. No? No comment? Okay. The thing is, we should understand that this shows that God is just not one-sided. It's not like one when you have chapters like this talking about the power of God, then we know his opulence, then we know his power, then we know what he actually is. And you know what's the beauty? This universal form, Prabhupada writes over and over and over again, is a temporary form. This is manifested as long as there is material nature. This is not actually God in his original form. Now, if people want to take it out of context and specifically focus on one thing and to scare away other things or to scare away people or to kind of find faults with Sanatana Dharma. Now, the other point is Hinduism is again kind of not, yeah. So, they can do it, but they didn't read the whole picture. They didn't get the whole picture of Lord, why he did it, for what purposes he did it. Isn't it good that, you know, that Lord is so powerful that he can kill? The Christians themselves say that God is so powerful that he is going to put you into hell or heaven at the time of death. Eternally you will go to hell if you commit sin, right? Isn't that scary? Man, I have no second choice. Either I go here or I go there. My life is doomed forever. Dude, please give me a second chance. This is where the second chance comes. So don't be misled by that. If you read an unbiased way, then you will realize Prabhupada has made it very, very logical. The reason why Krishna consciousness has been accepted is that it's based on scriptures, but very logically given, not scare tactics. You know, you follow, believe in Krishna or you go to hell. Prabhupada never said that. He said, we are not even converting anybody to his Krishna consciousness. If you are a Christian, be a good Christian. If you are a Muslim, be a good Muslim. Try to follow your own tenets properly. Then you will probably understand. He was never forceful like that. But Christians use that tactics, let them be. So what can be done? That's why we are having this Bhakti Shastri, so that we read Prabhupada's books and we understand. We become firmly situated in the philosophical conclusions, that nobody can give this counter-argument and scare us out of our own. Well, okay.
So there was a news in ISKCON news. So
maybe one of the devotees, after they get Bhakti Shastri, they'll go start a Bhakti Shastri in Russia.
Yeah. I don't know what eventually happened, but, you know, there was ISKCON news that, you know, this is what happened.
Okay.
So I saw the article from the Christian missionary, and then he was
Well, Prabhuji, they use everything and anything to find faults. So, what can be done?
So, Prabhuji, I think coming back to what we were discussing, it's just Lord Krishna is just trying to is Lord Krishna trying to just state that please don't take me for granted.
Yes, that can be
in also. A good way. Yeah. But usually we tend to write sometimes, and then we make mistakes. So this is a good eye opener kind of thing. You know, don't take me for granted, but I can be good and I can be bad too. But
outstanding point. Because later Arjuna realizes his stuff, you know, and he says, oh, I just thought you as my friend and I just was very casual with you. And we'll come to that verse. Very excellent point. Thank you. And Bhanu had a point and then Sukeshwari Mataji had a point. We have good on time. No worries.
Prabhuji, I was just remembering while we were reading Bhagavatam shlokas, we realized that Krishna has a blue form and his body is blue. And I mean, please correct me, but this is what I understood out of the purport when we read that the hair on Krishna is the trees that you see. The sky is blue because of Krishna's body. The rivers are his sweat. So I wanted to make sure that we are on the universal body. I mean, what we are seeing, the material manifestation, we know it's the whole universal form is temporary. But would you be able to quote the, this is long time back, so I might be a little confused about here and there. But I want to make sure that the ocean is salty because it's Krishna's sweat. And
well, in the second canto of Bhagavatam, there is a description of universal form. For those who really want to get into the universal form, the second canto, Shukdev Goswami, he first says you should meditate on the universal form. And there he gives all that you are talking about. The hair on the universal form is the trees and the veins are his rivers and so on and so forth. So if you can read the second canto of Bhagavatam, just go through the translation.
Yes, Prabhu. We did, but I just wanted to make sure that I'm relating it right. Because when we did that, we did not do the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So I'm trying to relate these two.
Well, the problem is that, you know, when you try to relate two things, that there should be there in both. Now, here in the universal form, there is no real mention of what you are speaking. Okay. So it's hard to make an exact one-to-one mapping to see whether it's not.
No, Prabhu. I'm not mapping. I'm just trying to understand my understanding. Is that right? That the hair on the universal form is the trees?
Yes.
The sweat is the ocean?
Sweat, I don't remember sweat is ocean. It's been a while since I read second canto, so I can't give you the exact answer on top of my head. But as far as I remember, the veins were the rivers, the trees were the hair, mountains were, I don't remember, bones, I don't remember.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. It's there.
I'll just look at it again, bro, because now that we're doing the third canto, but I'll just, you know. Yeah.
Just if you go back and just
go back and look at it. Yeah.
And
thank you.
Let me know also, then that will be good.
Yeah, thank you. Bro.
Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. Ramananda Sakha. You had a question? Okay. You go ahead, Banu.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
I just want to make a comment, and please correct me if my understanding is correct. You know, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is confused. You know, he doesn't know whether he should fight or not fight. Because if he's going to fight, he's going to commit sin, he'll go to hell. And if he doesn't fight, he may be killed on the battlefield. Either way, he's worried that he's going to come out the loser. Right? So that's there from the, you know, the Bhagavad Gita. Now, he asked the Lord to see him in his universal form. And the Lord says in the first few verses that, behold, everything is here. Whatever you wish to see, you can see. The past, the present, and the future. Mm. And whatever you wish to see, whatever form you wish to see, you'll be able to see.
Right.
So the description of why the Lord appeared in a fiery, scary form is because, you know, Arjuna was on the battlefield about to wage war. Mm. And in the war, you don't know what's the outcome going to be. I mean, are you going to win or are you going to lose? If you lose, you lose your life. If you win, well, you kill some people, but you get to, you know, enjoy the freedom. So here the Lord is giving him a sneak preview of the future. And there Arjuna is able to visualize not only all the soldiers from both sides getting killed, you know, in the mouths of the universal form, you know, we're grossly being described where their head smashed between teeth, etc. But he was also able to see Bhishma, his beloved grandfather, Dronacharya, his guru, and he was able to see Karna, getting killed. So he was able to see all this. So the Lord shows him all this to assure him that, hey, do the fight, because it's already been prearranged. You just be an instrument. Is that correct understanding of my for me, or am I making some mistake here?
No, it's a very right understanding. It's a nice point. Thank you, Sakharamananda.
Just a comment regarding Shukeshwari Mataji's comment on the color of a sky being the color of Krishna. I think that's a nice meditation. I don't know whether that is true or not, but it's nice to think that when we look at the sky, we are seeing the Krishna's body, really.
Well, now that you bring that point up, in most of the scriptures, Krishna's color is not that of blue sky. At least I haven't read that. It is the color of a fresh monsoon cloud. What's that?
Before rain, you get
the dark clouds. So it's like the fresh monsoon clouds.
Yeah.
Blackish, bluish. Again, it's so the sky of, again, I haven't read anywhere. Probably I didn't, because I know hardly anything of Prabhupada's books, I might have missed that, but usually that's what I read. This is like, even there is Chauraragranya Ashtakam. There is like, where Krishna is famously said as thief. He's like, how does it go? It's a very beautiful verse. I don't remember. We'll probably sing it sometime. It's like, Krishna is like glorified as a thief. Chauraragranya. Chaura is like thief. Agra means foremost among thief. Agraganya. So amongst the thief, he is the foremost. So in that, there's so many things. Somebody, if you chant the name of the Lord, then he steals away all your sins. Then he has stolen away the luster of the flesh rain cloud, and he has put on himself. So it's like a poetic way of comparing. Krishna is like, and then the later in that same thing, the devotee who says that I'm going to steal you and keep you in my heart and lock you forever. So that is, I'm digressing a little bit, but the blue sky and Krishna, I don't have where Prabhupada has written. Probably it is written somewhere, I don't know.
I know just 100th, 1,000th of what you know, Prabhu. But I was just remembering the purport that I read, that, it was the, there were two things we were talking about, that, there's effulgence, right? Krishna's effulgence, that is impersonal effulgence. And the sneak preview of that a little bit gets into the temporary material world, and that causes the blueness of the sky.
I see.
So this is one of the shlokas I think I read, but, I have very less memory.
Right.
But and the other thing why I really realized that the veins were compared to the rivers, because I remember this very well, because I tried to note down. I was actually trying to write down, because Ayurvedic medicine, Prabhupada explains in purport that people who have vein problems, they say that it's nice for them to go and have bath in the rivers. And people who have arterial problems, then it's good for them to go have bath in the sea or something like that.
I see.
So then when he compares the universal form in purport, he explains that. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madhuri. Okay. Back to universal form after some discussion. All right. Let's go and now we get to know what's the mission of the Lord. Arjuna is kind of recap that he offers the players to the Lord. He says, what's your mission? Why are you here? Why are you showing this form? Okay, that's page 509/510. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kalosmi loko kshayakrit pravriddho lokan samahartumiha pravritta rite pitvam na bhavishyanti sarve yevasistaha pratyanikesho yodha. The Supreme Personality of God had said, time I am the great destroyer of the worlds, and I have come to destroy all people. with exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers here on both sides will be slain. Text 33. Tasmatvamuttishta yasholabhasva jitva shatrum bhungshvarajyam samruddham mayaivate nihata purvameva nimittamatram bhavasavyasachin. Therefore get up, prepare to fight and win glory, conquer your enemies and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savyasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. Text 34. Dronam cha bhishmam cha jayadrutam cha karnam tatayana piyodaviran mayahatam stvam jahima vyatishtha yudhyasvajetasirane sapatnan. Drona, Bhishma, Jayadrata, Karna and the other great warriors have already been destroyed by me. Therefore kill them and do not be disturbed. Simply fight and you will vanquish your enemies in the battle. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Every plan is made by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but He is so kind and merciful to His devotees that He wants to give credit to His devotees who carry out His plan according to His desire. Life should therefore move in such a way that everyone acts in Krishna consciousness and understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the medium of a spiritual master. The plans of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are understood by His mercy, and the plans of the devotees are as good as His plans. One should follow such plans and be victorious in struggle for existence. So here one point Srila Prabhupada makes is that the plan of the devotees is as good as Lord's plan. One practical aspect in our society is that when we have a lot of services and when the devotees ask us to come for a lot of services, it doesn't mean that every devotee who asks us to come for service is the voice of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the devotee's plan is chief of devotees is our spiritual master or our Siksha Guru or Diksha Guru. So we should take permission from him first and before we execute our duties. Not just that everybody comes and says, you know, do this, and you say, oh, that is, maybe Krishna is talking. No, that's not correct. Otherwise, what happens is that you quickly get pulled into so many projects and there will be no sense of balance. You know, your sadhana will suffer, your job might suffer. So it's very important that one has a balance of how we do our services. We are here not for just like for a few months of service, but we are here for a lifetime of service. And we should push, as that doesn't mean we should become complacent and reject everything, saying that I need balance. But one shouldn't take on more than what one can do. This is not something I'm making up, but when we read Nectar of Devotion next semester, somebody might remind me of this particular point, and then I'll say where Prabhupada exactly says, you know, he says that you should be able to do what you can in your spiritual life and stick to it. You can't just take at once more and then, you know, you not stick to it. So one should be having from internally with the mercy of one's authorities and guidance of one's authorities that this is I can do, this is I cannot do. And we should be like that with the devotees also, saying that this is a service I can do, this I cannot do. Otherwise, ISKCON really stands for individual, spontaneous and voluntary. And the voluntary factor has to come in, not an obligation. Because when the obligation comes in, initially you may be obligated, you will do, but internally you will think, you know, why am I doing this? I have so much of other stuff to do. I could have done that. I'm so tired. I'm not exhausted. You know, I didn't want to do this, but somehow I got pulled into this. So in that way, the mind is so disturbed with the services that you can't do it in a happy frame of mind. It's important. Any comments? Any questions? Sanjay Ovacha. This is... Oh, there is one... Sorry, one point I wanted to tell. Thank you, Madhijita. Thank you so much.
the Savyasachi, Nimitta Matram, that's the important thing. That Krishna already has a plan, and then Arjuna was just supposed to be an instrument, just supposed to be an instrument of the Lord. And which comes back to the same point which you are mentioning in the second chapter, that Arjuna was fearing, you know, if I kill these people, I'll be suffering. You know, I'm kind of causing the death of so many. We have so many reasons for that. You know, the family. He gives so many reasons in the first chapter that the family traditions are destroyed, the women become polluted, and all the social projects are stopped. People who have done this are going to go to hell. I don't want to go to hell. But here he says, you are not going to kill them. I have already killed them. Whether you want to participate or not is up to you. If you don't kill them, they'll be killed one way or other, because that's my plan, not your plan. That's Nimitta Matram. So that's where it comes in. Text 35 on page 513. Nilesh had a... What is easy?
If you know that, what's going to happen? And
no, that is true. It's a valid point, because some might say, you know, Arjuna had no qualms. I mean, he knew that he foresaw the future, and then if I foresee the future, I'll act accordingly. But the fact of the matter is, no, that's not correct, because the simple fact that we have a spiritual master who is guiding you. He can guide you in terms of, because Krishna, the external representation of Krishna is your guru, is your spiritual master. So he guides you accordingly. And so if he says, if you follow with faith, then... Because you should remember one thing. After Arjuna saw this, he said, okay, Lord, I'm going to go on a vacation. Anyway, they are going to get killed. I'll come back and enjoy my kingdom. You already killed them. What's the need for me to kill? Okay, take care. I'm just going to go around, so we'll do some little bit hunting, go to yatras and come back. And take over. No, he said, okay, I saw you, my Lord. I'm willing to be your instrument. So as long as that faith is there, that we are the instruments of Krishna, then that is the important point here, whether Arjuna saw it or not. And besides, you know what? We are not in the position of Arjuna. We are not here waiting to kill all our relatives for kingdom. We are just going about doing our daily duties. We are trying to maintain family. We are trying to maintain sadhana. That doesn't require a whole foresight. If you do your sadhana, you will be in Krishna consciousness. If you neglect the principles, you won't. Simple. You can see the future also. By mercy of Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada writes clearly in his books that these are the steps, these are the things you have to do. Rupa Goswami has given so much of, you know, forecast in future. Adav Shraddha, Tatav Sadhu Sangha. He has said, do this, then you will reach there. Do this, then you will reach there. You can see your future also, that we are here for Prema Bhakti. So we also have that vision, future vision, because of our great acharyas. And in Nectar of Devotion, you really see that. You'll really see, like, you know, where you are, where are you coming from, what bhakti can I do, how will I go, where will I, it's all clearly written. So our future vision is also there. No worries. Prasad had a point.
Just wanted to say that in case of Arjuna, in addition to seeing the future, the most important realization he had was that he was not responsible. He was only an instrument.
That is true. That is true. He still had to fight. And then this time he wholeheartedly fought, because he had that faith. Exactly. And the other point, important point is this, that before the universal form, Arjuna had that faith. It's not he needed to see his relatives getting killed before he got convinced. It's not like, okay, Lord, you show me your form. You know, I want to see your form first. And, you know, I see my relatives are killed in there. All right. Okay, no, I'm convinced. You are God. I agree. I'll fight. No, he didn't say that. He says, I'm ready to fight. In 10th chapter, he says that you are the supreme, you are the absolute truth. Whatever you say, I'll do. And then he was ready, convinced. Krishna need not have shown Arjuna the universal form, and Arjuna would have still fought. Because that faith is important, rather than actually getting assurance that our future is going to be okay, that I won't die in a car accident, that I won't die a pauper, or my bank balance will be okay. We don't need to see that future of ours. So it's the faith that important. And we get the faith as we serve. Makes sense? Good point, though.
Right. Hare Krishna. Okay, let's go. We have 20 more verses to cover, and we have about 40 minutes. Yeah. This is page 513, text 35. Sanjaya Uvacha, Et Echa Shrutva Vachanam Keshavasya Kritanjalir Vepamana Kiriti Namaskritva Bhuya Evaha Krishnam Sagad Gadam Bhita Bhita Pranamya. Sanjaya said to Dhritarashtra, O King, after hearing these words from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the trembling Arjuna offered obeisances with folded hands again and again. He fearfully spoke to Lord Krishna in a faltering voice as follows. Arjuna uvacha, Stane Hrishikesha tava prakitya jagat prahrishyati anurajyate cha rakshami bhitani dishodravanti sarve namashyanti cha siddha sangai. Arjuna said, O master of the senses, the world becomes joyful upon hearing your name, and thus everyone becomes attached to you. Although the perfected beings offer you their respectful homage, the demons are afraid and they flee here and there. All this is rightly done. Text 37. Kasma chatena nameran mahatman gariyase brahmano pyadikrit kartre ananta devesha jagan nivasa tvamaksharam sada sattat paramyat. O great one, greater than even Brahma, you are the original creator. Why then should they not offer their respectful obeisances to you, unto you? O limitless one, God of gods, refuge of the universe, you are the invincible source, the cause of all causes, transcendental to this material manifestation. Tvamadi deva purusha puranas tvamasya vishvasya param nidhanam vetasi vedyam cha param cha dhama tvaya tatam vishvam anantarupam. You are the original personality of Godhead, the oldest, the ultimate sanctuary of this manifested cosmic world. You are the knower of everything, and you are all that is knowable. You are the supreme refuge above the material modes. O limitless form, the whole cosmic manifestation is pervaded by you. Vayur yamognir varuna sashankaha prajapatistvam pratiti prapitamahascha namo namaste stu sahasra kritva punascha bhuyopi namo namaste. You are air, you are the supreme controller, you are the fire, you are the water, you are the moon, you are the Brahma, the first living creature, you are the great grandfather. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you 1,000 times again and again. Nama purastad ataprishtataste namostute sarvata eva sarva anantavirya mitavikramastvam sarvam samapnoshitatosi sarva. Obeisances to you from the front, from the behind, and from all sides. O unbounded power, you are the master of limitless might. You are all pervading, and thus you are everything. Purport, just we'll read this purport, small purport. Out of loving ecstasy for Krishna, his friend, Arjuna is offering respect from all sides. He is accepting that he is the master of all potencies and all prowess and far superior to all great warriors assembled on the battlefield. It is said in the Vishnu Puran 1969, Yoyam tavagato deva samipam devataganaha sattvam eva jagat srashta yata sarva gato bhavan. Whoever comes before you, even if he be a demigod, is created by you, O Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 41 and 42. Sakheti matva prasavam yaduktam he Krishna he Yadava he Sakheti agnyatamahimanam tavedam maya pramadat pranayena vapi yachavaha sartam asatkritosi viharashayasana bhojaneshu ekotavapyachyuta tat samaksham tat kshamaye tvam aham aprameyam. Thinking of you as my friend, I have rashly addressed you, O Krishna, O Yadava, O my friend, not knowing your glories. Please forgive whatever I may have done in jest, in madness or love. I have dishonored you many times, jesting as we relaxed, lay on the same bed, or sat and ate together, sometimes alone and sometimes in front of many friends. O infallible one, please excuse me for all these offenses. Here, the acharyas go a little deeper and they give explanation for each of the Hey Krishna, Hey Yadava, Hey Saketi. In that, when he addresses Krishna, he condescendingly thought, you are a cowherd boy. Hey cowherd boy, Hey Krishna. And then when he addressed as, Hey Yadava, we are from Rishni clan. You are from Yadava clan, you can't even rule properly. Hey Yadava. And then, Hey friend. Then it was very condescendingly he addressed, Hey friend. It's just like, you know, if you go to any company or any store, any large retail shop, that salesman, he comes and says, Hey friend, how are you? But you are not his friend. No, he's neither your friend. And here also, similarly, Arjuna addressed Krishna very condescendingly. Hey friend, you are not even a minister. You are just a counselor to Ugrasen. But I'm a king, or I'm a king's brother. So he had that thought, because it was, when you are a friend, and when Krishna hides all his opulences from you, you don't know, you just address him like that. When he sees this, he is scared. He says, I just addressed you not knowing your supreme power, but now seeing you, I'm just like, please. This is Arjuna's mood when he says these words. Let's move on. 43. Pitasi lokasya characharasya tvamasya pujyascha gurur gariyan natvat samosti abhyadika kutonyo lokatraye piya pratima prabhava. You are the father of this complete manifestation of the moving and the non-moving. You are its worshipable chief, the supreme spiritual master. No one is equal to you. Can anyone be one with you? How then could there be anyone greater than you within the three worlds, O Lord of the immeasurable power? Tasmat pranamya pranidhaya kayam prasadaye twamahamishamidyam piteva putrasya sakheva sakhyu priya priyarvasi deva sodum. Oh, you are the supreme Lord to be worshipped by every living being. Thus I fall down to offer you my respectful obeisances and ask your mercy. As the father tolerates the impudence of his son, a friend the impertinence of a friend, and a husband the familiarity of his wife, please tolerate the wrong I may have done. So here in the three examples, again, Arjuna is taking the lower position. Krishna is the father, Arjuna is the son, and a friend, and then, you know, husband, wife. So Krishna is like, previously he says that you are the supreme worshipable. So sometimes the wife is very familiar with her husband, and she doesn't, in that familiarity, there may be some jestful words or some joking words in that relation. So Arjuna says the same thing, that please forgive me. Text 35. Adrishta purvam hrishitosmi drishva bhaye nacha pravyatitam manome tadeva me darshaya deva rupam prasida devesha jagan nivasa. After seeing this universal form which I have never seen before, I am gladdened, but at the same time my mind is disturbed with fear. Therefore, please bestow your grace upon me and reveal again your form as a personality of Godhead, O Lord of Lords, O abode of universe. 46. Kiritinam gadinam chakrahastam icchamitvam drashtumaham tataiva tenaiva rupena chaturbhujena sahasrabaho bhava vishwamurte. O universal form, O thousand-armed Lord, I wish to see you in your four-armed form, with helmeted head, with club, wheel, conch, and the lotus flower in your hands. I long to see you in that form. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Maya. So, this is again set of verses where Arjuna is like offering his regrets and his begging forgiveness for Krishna to forgive his impudence and his joking nature and his offenses he might have caused. And then he says, you know, I have seen your form, but please, I want to go and see back your four-handed form. And this form is enough for me for now. And
So the next few verses, we'll go. We'll see what Krishna says. Shri Bhagavan Vacha. Maya prasannena tavarjunedam rupam param darshitam atma yogat tejo mayam vishvam anantam adyam yanme tvadanyena nadrishta purvam. The Supreme Personality of God had said, my dear Arjuna, happily have I shown you by my internal potency this supreme universal form within the material universe. No one before you has ever seen this primal form, unlimited and full of glaring effulgence. Text 48. Na veda yajna jnanair na danair na kriya bhir na tapo bhir ugrai evam rupa shakya aham riloke drashtum tvadanyena kuru pravira. O best of the Kuru warriors, no one before you has ever seen this universal form of mine. For neither by studying the Vedas, nor by performing the sacrifices, nor by charity, nor by pious activities, nor by severe penances can I be seen in this form in the material world. Mate vyatama vimudabhavo drishtva rupam goramidrin mamedam vyapeta bhipritamana punastvam tadeva me rupamidam prapasya. You have been perturbed and bewildered by seeing this horrible feature of mine. Now let it be finished. My devotee, be free again from all disturbances. With a peaceful mind, you can now see the form you desire. So, Arjuna, this is again set of verses where Krishna kind of says, okay, now done with this form. Even he glorifies this form. In the first three verses, he glorifies the power of universal form, saying that nobody has seen this before, and neither by doing the yajna nor by doing any sort of austerities can you actually see this form. Later we'll know that how can we see this form, and what is even more difficult to see than a form other than this.
So he said that neither by austerities, nor by studying Vedas, nor by sacrifices can one see that form. But we see that not only Arjuna, but many demigods and others also saw that universal form. And but we don't know whether they had that qualification really to see the universal form. How can we explain that?
Very good point. We will come to one of the purports where Prabhupada talks about that. Text 50? Yes, text 50. Sanjay Ovacha. Ityarjunam vasudevas tatoktva svakam rupam darshayama sabhuyaha ashvasayam ashachabitamenam bhutva punasamya vapur mahatma. Sanjaya said to Dhritarashtra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, having spoken thus to Arjuna, displayed his real four-armed form and at last showed his two-armed form, thus encouraging the fearful Arjuna. So in this one verse, it is Krishna showed his four-hand form and then he reverted back to his two-handed form. Text 51. Arjuna uvacha drishtvedam manusham rupam tava saumyam janardana idanim asmi samrittaha sachetaha prakritim gataha. When Arjuna thus saw Krishna in his original form, he said, O Janardana, seeing this human-like form, so very beautiful, I am now composed in mind, and I am now restored to my original nature. So this is the very important verse where Arjuna says, I am now restored to my original nature, because I was accustomed to seeing you in that particular form, and when you showed me this another form, I was scared. Because the devotee's main attraction with Krishna is the beauty of the Lord, is that particular form of the Lord which he is eternally been worshipping. Seeing any other form makes him disturbed. So this is where it comes back, where Arjuna says, no, okay, now I am like restored to my original condition. Now I have seen you back. So, yes?
Between the four-handed and the two-handed form, why is he more... So earlier he was requesting to, you know, requesting Lord Krishna to show his four-handed form.
The question is?
So, I mean, I'm sorry, why was the transition through four-handed form? Well, is there any special significance for the four?
No, there is nothing special. It is just here, Krishna is just fulfilling all the desires of Arjuna. He said, "Show me your universal form." He showed him. Next is, "I want to see your beautiful 400 form." He showed him that, and then he reverted it back. There is no special. It was just a mercy of Krishna to Arjuna. Nothing special on that. But there are few other characteristics of that particular form which we are talking. Yes, Leshru.
Prabhuji, we were discussing that in the morning session that Narayan form is, universal form is coming out of, is the source of that is Narayan. And the source of Narayan is Krishna. That's how it is, or that's why he showed that way.
You raised such a wonderful question. You know why? Because that is one of the questions for your homework. So you need to answer that. Based on Prabhupada. That's my question. I don't know if anybody seen the notes. No. So some might say that from universal form came the forms of Vishnu and Krishna. Based on Prabhupada's purport, how will you refute that? That is one of the questions for homework. So it's there in Prabhupada's purport. So when you read it, you'll get it. Actually, we'll get a few glimpses into that answer to that question. But then when you write the homework, you'll get really clear what it is all about. Okay, we'll get to that point. And then we had somebody else also who kind of... Yes, Bhanu Prabhu had a...
Prabhuji.
Yes, Prabhuji.
In the Shirosa Kadai Vishnu form, you know, where Krishna says that I permeate every material... form, all forms, all matter, including atoms, I'm pervaded, right? And the four-armed form. Is that part of the universal form? The Shirodha Kasai Vishnu form?
So your question is Shirodha Kasai Vishnu a part of universal form?
Is Shirodha Kasai Vishnu his form when he says that I permeate every atom, every living being? Is that actually the universal form, or is that part of the universal form?
Okay, so the Lord as Shirodha Kasai Vishnu, he pervades the entire atom, as you rightly mentioned. And when he pervades the entire atom, by what form does he pervade the entire atom? No, that is the universal form. When you actually, here you should understand this, that when Lord pervades this, you can't see the Lord. He is the time, he is the matter, he is everything, he is there in everything, right? He is spread to, right now when we speak, every single atom in this room is pervaded by the Lord. Our cars are pervaded by the Lord, this mountain is pervaded by the Lord, because the Lord is holding it. We read it in the 15th chapter. It's really like interesting experience. So Lord is pervaded everywhere, correct? He's there in every atom. He's there air. He's there everywhere. But in what form is he pervaded? Is it like limitless, nameless, formless, some sort of gas? It's like gas can pervade to everything. Is that something like that? No, but this universal form is that actual representation how the Lord is pervaded in everything. Or the other words, you can see everything within the universal form of the Lord. Krishna says, when he shows the universal form, whatever there is to be seen, or whatever you desire to see, anything is right there in the universal form. Your time, your name it, is there. So this form is like the Lord is pervaded, but he is just bringing it out, saying that this is how I pervade, and this is my form I pervade in matter. So that is the explanation to that. Rakshit Prabhu.
There was actually an earlier verse, which is text 3, where Arjuna is specifically asking the question, can I see your cosmic form in which you have manifested in the universe? If you go back to the purport of text 3, he's saying, O greatest of all personalities, or supreme form, though I see you here before me in your actual position as you have described yourself, I wish to see how you have entered into this cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form of yours. Now, he has posed this question, and the form that Krishna shows subsequently is the universal form.
Nice.
We would have to take it that that is the form which is the answer to Arjuna's question.
Nice. Thank you. Nice point.
But then it raises the question of this forearm form. Where is it existing? This forearm form of Narayan, is it the super soul, or is it in some other planet?
I don't know. I have to find that out. It's a good point.
Because somewhere there was, I know in these classes and discussions, there are distinctions made between planets, that if you go to some planet, you will see the forearm Narayan form. But if you go to Goloka Vrindavan, you will see the Syam Sham Sundar
right.
form.
It's also said in the Brahma Samhita, Yashyaika Kalamathavalambya Jeevantiloma Vilaja Jagarananata. So Krishna is pervaded in every atom. Vishnu Mahan. So that Vishnu is pervaded in every atom. So that worship, to that Govinda, I worship. It's there in Brahma Samhita also, which kind of says, it's as if Vishnu is pervading through the entire cosmic manifestation, not the universal form. But I don't have an exact idea. I know it's two parallel tracks. Here Vishnu is pervading in that, or here is the universal form which is pervading in that. So where is the meeting point, if any? I don't know. Is it like Shirodakshai Vishnu is, again expands himself as a universal form and pervades into it? I don't know. Shraddha Mata, yeah, why don't you take the phone? The microphone.
Yes, in the photograph it was for. Rakshita, some time ago you were mentioning about the form in which Vishnu enters every atom as it is in the form of time. And then that kind of starts the.
That was an interpretation, or rather a comment, that was made by Keshav Bharti Maharaj at one time, that in the atom he exists in the form of time. That's what I remember. Because the question that came up was that if Krishna is there in the atom, then how come the atom doesn't have consciousness of the life force? So is there a distinction between Krishna as the life force in a living entity vis-a-vis Krishna in an atom, which may not necessarily have consciousness. Although Sri Advaita Swami has even interpreted that even atoms have consciousness, which is another, because he gave this example that by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going through that forest, what is it,
Jarikanda.
Jarikanda forest, and started singing. He said the whole universe lit up. Everything had consciousness. And so it's a very difficult area.
Well, one thing we understand from Prabhupada's books, thank you, Masji, is that Krishna can make something which is matter as spirit, and he can convert something which is spirit as matter. Now, so that is a sort of achintya beda beda. You can kind of inconceivable way how Krishna can convert things. So he certainly can convert consciousness into matter. Case in point, when Krishna played on his flute, it is said the rocks in Vrindavan, they melted. They just melted. And then trees which were like standing still, they began to dance. Reverse effect happened. Which were moving, they became stunned. And which were like non-moving, they started moving. That was the power of Krishna's flute. When Krishna blew on his flute, the deer, the cows, the Vrajvasis, they just became stunned. The cows, the calves, it is clearly given. The calves were licking, or they were taking the milk from the mouth, from the mother's udder, cow's udder. And then when Krishna blew on his flute, the calf just became a statue. So the udder was stuck in the mouth of the calf, but the calf was not drinking. The tears started flowing. Everybody became stunned. The deers, the peacocks, everything became just stunned, like, you know, frozen, like rock. Nobody could move. And all the moving things, And Yamuna, she was moving. She became stunned. She stopped moving. She became so ecstatic. And the trees, the rocks, and which were like non-moving, they started dancing. Trees started dancing. That is the power of Krishna. So we can do that. There is no, again, he has created matter and spirit, so he can change it the way he wants it. We can't do it. So
That's very true, because you'll come across verses in the Bhagavad Gita which would say that mere combination of matter will not give rise to a living entity or life.
Correct.
And so Krishna could do it, but regular scientists will not be able to do it.
Right. Thank you. Nice point. Shall we? Okay. Okay. Where were we? 52? Thank you. 5:30? Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Sudurdasham idam rupam, Drishwanam asi yanmama, Devapi api asya rupasya, Nityam darshana kankshinaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, this form of mine you are now seeing is very difficult to behold. Even the demigods are ever seeking an opportunity to see this form." Correct. Actually, the in the 52, the word is su dur dasham. Dur dasham means difficult. Su dur dasham is very, very difficult. Su durlabham is same category. Durlabham is difficult. Su durlabham is very difficult. Very difficult to behold this form of mine. And here, Prabhupada, these last few verses, Prabhupada goes extensively giving various Vedic evidences on how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, and from him comes Vishnu forms, and from him comes the universal form. It's extensively mentioned here. And that's the proof of the matter is that he says that even the demigods can't behold this form. This is so difficult. Nobody can even see this form. At least the demigods were able to see the universal form as it mentioned, but here even the demigods couldn't see that form of Krishna. So it's very, very, you know, beautiful form of Krishna that nobody can see it. Coming back to your point, it's there one of the purports I was trying to find. How could the demigod see that universal form, right? If you said Vedeshu, that, you know, without even studying Vedas, doing, performing severe austerities, seeing the performing charity. Prabhupada writes in one of the purports, I'm trying to get that exact thing, that with a little bit of bhakti, using all these things, you can still see the universal form of the Lord. I mean, for Vedic sacrifices or study of Vedas, add a little bhakti. Or for charity, add a little bhakti. Or for penances, add a little bhakti. Or for all these things, rituals, add a little bhakti. Then you can see the universal form of God. It's not that difficult. But this is very, very difficult. And in the next verse, Krishna says, why it is so difficult and how can you actually see my form of mine? Shall we? Yes.
So, but when Krishna appeared, everyone could see that form, even ordinary people, whoever happens, just like he was there, just like a human being. Does it mean that, when he appears, it's just his grace that he is visible to everyone? Otherwise, it's very, very, very difficult to see that form.
Correct. That's a... I think Prabhupada also mentions that verse here. Okay, not worry. Find that verse. I think it's mentioned somewhere here. In any case, Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. I don't remember the exact verse. 10th canto. It's a famous verse. Ittam satam brahma sukhanubhutya. Dasyam gatanam paradaivatena. Maya shritanam naradarakena. Shakam vijahru kritapunya punja. It is, we'll look up the Shloka books. It's a very important verse. It's Ittam, it starts with I. Ittam satam brahma sukhanubhutya. Dasyam gatanam paradaivatena. 254, page 254 on Shloka book. Okay. It's 10, 12, 11. Okay. Ittam satam brahma sukhanubhutya tasyam gatanam paradaivatena mayashritanam naradarakena shakam vijahru krita punya punja. Those who are engaged in self-realization, appreciating the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, those engaged in devotional service, accepting the Supreme Personality of God as Master, as well as those who are under the clutches of Maya, thinking Lord as an ordinary person, cannot understand that certain exalted personalities, after accumulating volumes of pious activities, are now playing with the Lord in friendship as cowherd boys. So the purport of this verse is based on how you saw, what was your consciousness, the Lord appeared to you exactly like that. So for the people who were merging on Brahman, he appeared as Brahman effulgence. For people who were servitors of the Lord, he appeared to be their perfect master. And for the people who were under the clutches of material existence, he appeared as a normal person. So seeing the Lord also in that condition is no seeing at all, because you can't appreciate Krishna. Duryodhana saw Krishna, but instead of falling flat on his feet and offering aarti to him, he tried to arrest him when he go. What's the use? So Krishna reveals, ye yatha mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mam vartmano vartante manushya partha sarvasha. According to one's nature, Krishna reveals himself. It's not like because Krishna is right there. That's why this is another point. People say, can you show me God? Well, do you have the eyes to see the God? Do you know who God is? Do you have even the faith? If God is right there in front of you in his Krishna form, you will still not see him as God. What's the point in you asking for God? You will see him as an ordinary, normal person. Same thing. So, does that answer your question a bit? So, it's like Krishna reveals according to his thing. Because, again, 7th chapter, 25th verse, Yoga Maya Samavrita, Mooloyam Navi Janati, Loko Mama Jamavya. Krishna says that, my Yoga Maya covers me and I am not visible to ordinary and foolish people. It takes some real special effort. Krishna himself says, even demigods, we are basically nothing. Even demigods, they kind of say that, they can't see Krishna. And we recently, few months ago, we had a devotee who came and who said that, his friend saw Krishna. He said his friend saw Krishna and he was playing with gopis in Vrindavan. I said to him, well, what can I say? Take it with a ton of salt. People usually say, take it with a grain of salt, something. Take it with a ton of salt. It's not so easy. Krishna himself says it's so difficult to see my form. Yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
Do great sages who are engaged in devotional service, the type that Krishna himself refers to in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, do they ever see him? Is there any scriptural evidence that these mahatmas who are constantly engaged in devotional service, the way Krishna would like them to do devotional service, do they ever see Krishna?
Well, one evidence is that Lord Ramchandra, when he was exiled, he went to Ayodhya. And then in Ayodhya, in the Dandakaranya forest, there were a group of sages. And they saw the Lord. And they were impelled with Shringar Ras. They wanted to enjoy the Lord as their husband, as that relationship. They immediately wanted as soon as they saw the Lord. Because that was their nature, that was their eternal position to act or to serve the Lord in that capacity. And then they expressed their desire to the Lord. And the Lord said, in this lifetime it's difficult because I have taken a vow of having only one wife and I cannot satisfy your desire. But in future lives, you will take birth in Vrindavan when I come as Krishna, I'll satisfy your desires. So there is that scriptural evidence which says, according to what you see, the Lord reciprocates. And he fulfilled those desires when he came as Krishna. So it's there everywhere. It's based on how one's aptitude is. And there is another twist to it, is that we have an eternal position of servitorship with Krishna. Either one is in the mood of friendship, one is in the mood of five primary relationships, or seven secondary relationships with Krishna. And that, as we do devotional service, that slowly opens up. That sort of, you will feel that natural aptitude that I like to serve the Lord in this particular way. And when we do Nectar of Devotion, or when we study Nectar of Devotion, we kind of slowly go into these stages. We understand that, yes, spontaneously you start getting attracted to Krishna in a particular rasa. You see Krishna as your son, as your lover, or as a friend, or as your master. And when that happens, then you go in that path, and Krishna also reciprocates in that particular mood or humor. Yes, Mataji first, and then Sakaramananda.
This question is an extension to what Rakshit Prabhu just said. So when Lord Krishna took his form as Lord Krishna, he used to perform all kinds of powerful things, like lifting the Govardhana mountain, or showing the whole world to to Mother Yashoda, and things like that. So was he considered or worshipped as God by people with whom he actually grew up? Because he used to definitely have some extra power, and he used to always show that power in one way or the other. So was he just considered as a as a regular child of Mother Yashoda, or was he really worshipped by many people as Lord Krishna?
Well,
because
the answer to that question is that the devotees in Vrindavan, Krishna covered his supremacy. He did not let them know or feel or perceive that he is the Supreme Absolute Truth. Now imagine if Krishna showed his universal form in Vrindavan with thousands of mouths, Mother Yashoda wouldn't feed him. Neither is there sweetness in that exchange. So Krishna would never show his opulence in Vrindavan. He would just show his sweetness or rasa. And devotees in Vrindavan never thought Krishna as their worshipable Lord. They thought their friend or a lover or my child. Mother Yashoda was thinking, if I don't feed Krishna, he will die. Here is the Supreme Absolute Truth who has been maintaining people since time immemorial, and who is so rich and powerful that thousands of Lakshmis serve him wonderfully. Yet Mother Yashoda thought, if I don't feed my child, he'll die. And then Supreme Absolute Truth, see, the name is Supreme Absolute Truth, so he'll speak the truth. And then, you know, when Uddhava came to Vrindavan asking Nanda Maharaj, or telling Nanda Maharaj with the message of Krishna, then he said, your son is, you know, Paramatma, he's the most truthful person. Nanda Maharaj immediately cut him down. What are you talking, Uddhava? He tells lies all the time. He's a thief. He steals butter. And you say he's the Supreme Absolute Truth? How can you say that? That is their mood. The mood of Rajavasis is they never see Krishna as somebody they worship. And Krishna, he says in many places that the chastisement which the gopis... Now, in the loving dealings between gopis and Krishna, there are many times where Krishna is chastised by the gopis. Krishna goes to meet Radharani, and Radharani is like, ask him to go away. I don't want to see him. Here you are, people run after Krishna. People want to see Krishna. Here Krishna is going after Radharani, trying to meet her. Radharani says, no, send him away. I don't want to. Because he has mana, that anger is there. But that's all transcendental. Okay, let's not get into imitating those things. But the fact of the matter is, when Radharani scolds Krishna for being away, for being late, for being with some other gopi, for doing something against her wish, Krishna feels that scolding is more pleasurable than all the perfect brahmanas in the perfect meter, the perfect hymns, the perfect things. is not giving him as much pleasure as the scolding of gopis in Vrindavan. So Krishna's relationship in Vrindavan is that it's just Madhurya Rasa, sweetness, no opulence, no fighting. But now which comes up to the question that he kills demons, he lifts Govardhan's hills. What happens? Doesn't it kind of... They don't see it as Krishna doing it. They see it as, you know, some luck, some fortune. Krishna killed Putana. Nanda Maharaj said, it was because he has done so many pious activities that Lord Narayan saved him. They refused to believe. Shaktasura, he was killed. And the boy said, we saw him. He just kicked the cart and the cart flew over. The cart is now the size of this room, with all laden with full of huge vessels. And when it came down crashing, it made such a sound. We saw him just, you know, kicked his feet and the cart flew. What are you talking? These children, they don't know what they are talking. How can the small infant, who's barely 2 months old, kick a cart this size and topple it over? Impossible. That is the mood of Rajavasis. Even though Krishna does it, he does it in a way to never interfere that love. Because Krishna is greedy to taste that love of Vrindavan. That is his nature. And he will do everything in his power not to exhibit that fierce form in Vrindavan. Therefore, when Krishna kicked the cart, he didn't expand himself. It is said that his infant's toes, infant's legs are delicate, like, you know, freshly blossoming leaves of twigs. And he never expanded his size to show universal form to kick the cart. He just kicked it. So that that mood is not lost. And, you know, many places, Trinavarta, he took him to the sky and he killed him in the sky. So that people couldn't see his fierce form there. In Agasura, in the mouth of Agasura, when Krishna was there, it is said he expanded. Now, Agasura was huge. He expanded because the boys were unconscious in the mouth of Agasura. They couldn't see him expanding. So he expanded himself. So they couldn't see his opulence. He does his pastimes in such a way not to disturb that loving sentiments of Vrindavan. Then again, when the forest fire came, Krishna said to his friends, sleep, close your eyes. Because they didn't want him to see, he didn't want them to see swallowing the fire. Now it's, you know, just like swallowing that huge forest fire, to see my friend swallowing, they will feel so severely agitated. Krishna said, close your eyes, sleep on the floor. And then he did his stuff, he swallowed the forest fire, then he said, okay, wake up now. So he does his pastimes in such a way that he doesn't disturb the mood, because he's greedy to get that love from the Vrajavasis. And the Vrajavasis in turn are just eager to relish that mood with Krishna and nothing else. They don't want to know anything else about Krishna. In fact, Uddhava got a earful when he went and tried to approach Krishna. And he tried to approach Vrajavasis, because they were burning in a severe ocean of lamentation. And Krishna said, Uddhava, please, you go to Vrindavan, you know, give them this message. And Uddhava, he was a student of Brihaspati. He was a great jnani. He was perfectly knowledgeable. Simple village people. What do they know? I'll go, I'll console them with my superior intelligence. I'll console them. I'll give them the message of Krishna. And I'll make them pacified. I'm Krishna's best counselor. I know what is there in his heart. And he went there, he got a earful. He came back, he said, he went there, he said, seeing this love, I just want to be born as a twig, a creeper, or a small piece of grass in Vrindavan, so that these gopis, when they walk on me, they'll get some dust from there on my head, then they'll become devotees like that. Because Krishna wanted to crush Uddhava's pride. That was his mood. Any other comments? I think we are running over time. Kishore must be waiting. Did you come with some guns, explosives?
All right. The question was just this, that it seems like depending on the relationship, he shows the form, right? So is there any form which is not respect? It seems like it's a relative form, like how you want to see shows. So is it called absolute form or relative form?
It's absolute, because our relationship with Krishna is eternal. It's not like our relationship changes with Krishna. It's eternal. It comes out when we are advanced in devotional service. And based on that form, we see. Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami very nicely analyzes all these relationships, and he also analyzes the mixture, the rasabhash, which means unwanted mixture of relationships also is defined. So there are clear guidelines on these relationships. So based on our relationship with Krishna, he shows that, and that's our eternal relationship. We do not want to see, as here Arjuna said, I am restored to my original condition or original position by seeing your form. That's the form Krishna, that's the form he sees. That's the form eternally he wants to see. Hanuman, the same thing. Eternally I want to see as Lord Rama. I want to see any other form. So that is eternal relationship. Sanatana. It does not change. But then when we get into nectar of devotion, we'll talk, doesn't change any ever? Okay, I've been, the people will say, I've been married now for 20 years. I can't wait. It's relationship doesn't change, eternally doesn't change with Krishna, it's different. Okay. The relationship with Krishna is so ever fresh, so new, and so exciting that it increases at every moment, it doesn't decrease. Good one. Yes. Mataji.
Prabhu, just had a quick question. I just wanted to know that, like you said, Hanuman, he always wants to see Lord Rama in that position. He cannot think Krishna is the supreme. So actually, I've been having this question for some time. Like all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we are all related to Krishna in one particular way. Mm. And so are the Sri Vaishnavas related to Krishna in a different way. Is that right?
Related in a different way.
Like,
I'm sorry,
for example, Gaudiya Vaishnavas may be like mother gopis or gopis of Vrindavan or servants or, like that in Goloka Vrindavan. And Sri Vaishnavas may be having positions in the Vaikuntha planets, serving Lakshmi, Narsingha, and so is that right?
Yes, it is. Because my humble request is that next semester when we do Nectar of Devotion, we'll have first introductory classes defining what pure devotion is. My humble request is that you attend those classes because they are the basis, the foundation of Nectar of Devotion. And they are very helpful to understand. Part of that is that, yes, pure devotion can be also applied not only to Lord Krishna directly in Shyamasundara form, but to Narasimha or Vishnu forms also is pure devotion. Yes. So they have a relationship with Vishnu that is pure devotion, that is also prema.
Yes, so it is. So is there a way that one of the Gaudiya Vaishnava people who are trying to follow can also go to Vaikuntha planet? Is there a possibility?
Yeah.
Depending on what they
are. What their inclination is. There are many devotees in Gaudiya Vaishnava who are like staunch devotees of Narasimha Dev. What about them? Yeah?
Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you. So my humble request is that last few purports, please read it very carefully. Prabhupada has taken a lot of pains to explain, like, you know, what's the personal form, what is Vishnu form, what's the hierarchy and things like that. Text 53 on 532.
Naham vedairna tapasa na danena na chejaya shakya evam vido drashtum drishtvanasi mam yata.
The form you are seeing with your transcendental eyes cannot be understood simply by studying the Vedas, nor by undergoing serious penances, nor by charity, nor by worship. It is not by these means that one can see me as I am. How can I see Krishna then? Next verse, text 54.
Bhaktya, bhaktya tu ananya shakya aham evam vidorjuna jnatum drashtum cha tatvena praveshtum cha parantapa.
My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and can thus be seen directly.
only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So this is clear on how we can see the beautiful Shyamasundara form of Krishna. Bhaktya, the word is through devotion, and the other important word is ananya, undivided. There is no, we don't mix it with anything else to see Krishna. Sakha Ramananda and then Bhanu Prabhu. Yes.
Actually, two questions, two Prabhuji. One is regarding one comment that came up during the discussion, which is the you are saying, does anyone want to know why Bhishma Dev was also shown in the universal form entering into the flaming mouths of the...
Right, right.
That's one. That's, okay.
Oh, the Prabhupada writes in one of the purports is that because he was silent when Draupadi was being disrobed and Arjuna decided to kill him for that particular offense. And it just goes to show that Krishna is, he is willing to not tolerate the offenses against his devotees. And he won't mind, he won't care who is it. He's not going to tolerate the offenses. There are many, many, many scriptural injunctions. We can talk on that particular point. But that was the reason. Second question?
Regarding this last verse, it says, Krishna can, he says he can only be understood by undivided devotional service.
Right.
As he is. Can this verse be used, for example, to defeat the arguments of Mayavadis, where definitely they lack, there is no sense of devotional service there if they think themselves as God there. And in that case, how can they understand the Supreme Absolute Truth? And Krishna is saying that only...
Well, they cannot. Mayavada bhasha sunile hoilo sarvanash. They can't understand Krishna as he is. They can just understand Krishna as some impersonal Brahman, and I'll reach there. But at least after Krishna reveals his universal form, we can use that as an argument, saying that, you know, if you are as powerful as God, can you show your universal form? You say you are as good as God. I am God, you are God, we are all God. And then God was able to show universal form. Can you show? That is the argument you can use against Mayavadis. The other thing is, Mayavadis have devotion. But their devotion is so coward, so pollutingly disturbing. It's hard. It's like, I'm going to worship this particular deity till I become liberated, then I take over this deity. This deity can be kind of set aside. I'm going to be the deity. That is the nature of Mayavadis. Such a terrible nature. But this is exact diametrically opposite to our thinking. So their devotion is just covered. Initially I need some devotion. Later, you know, get rid of the devotion, everything else goes aside. Rakshit Prabhu. Yes. Yes, yes.
What deity are the Mayavadis worshipping?
Five major demigods: Ganesha, Bhagavan, Krishna, Rama, Durga, Surya. Five.
And so they don't worship the deity of Krishna as such?
They worship again, he's just another god, demigod, some higher power, you know, is the form. Now I can perceive that higher power as this form, you know, he is that form. But ultimately, he is also impersonal. I'm just perceiving right now in that particular form, that's all. So, okay, let's quickly wrap it up. Some question? Oh, yes, Bhanu Prabhu.
Yeah, Prabhuji, here, verse 54, where he says, Bhaktya Tvav Ananya Sakya. This Ananya Sakya,
yeah.
This undivided... devotion, is it applying only to Krishna in his Shyamasundara form, or can it also be applied to, say, in the form of Lord Narasimhadev or Vishnu or, you know, Vamana or any of the forms that the Lord has taken?
It can apply to all the Vishnu Tattva forms. That we'll read in the Nectar of Devotion, saying that pure devotion is applicable to all the Vishnu forms. Last verse. The 54 has very big purport, and again it's like extensively dwelling on how Krishna as he is the Supreme Personality of God, using many different scriptural references. Text 55, last verse. Matkrin karma mat paramo mat bhakta sangha vivarjitaha nirvairai sarva bhuteshu ya sa mameti pandavaha. My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contaminations of fruitive activities and mental speculation, and he who works for me, makes me the supreme goal of his life, who is friendly to every living being, certainly comes to me. Here, Prabhupada writes in the purport, that is fifth line. Therefore, this verse is considered to be the essence of Bhagavad Gita. So here Krishna gives five activities. First thing is mat karma krin. Prabhupada gives a very, very nice purport. He explains every single phrase. Mat karma krin. What can you do for Krishna? This is activities for Krishna. Planting tulsi, watering tulsi, cleaning the temple, doing the deity service. These are all activities for Krishna. Mat karma krin. Then mat paramo. This is considering me as supreme. Mat paramo. Prabhupada, again he says. And then the next thing is Sangha Varjita. Sangha Varjita is because we spoke pure devotional service in the previous verse. Bhakta tu ananya. This is pure devotional service. Sangha Varjita means free from karma and jnana. That shouldn't be included in bhakti. Again, in the Nectar of Devotion, we'll go elaborately deep into what it means by that. Jnana karma, you have this anya vilashita sunyam jnana karma janavritam anukulena krishnanishilam bhakti ruttamam. So that particular verse, there is no jnana or karma, shouldn't be included. Again, we'll go deep into that. Then, when you go onto all these, nirvair sarvabhuteshu, he sees no living entity as his enemy. There is no enemy. There is no friend. No, friend is, of course, devotees are friends, but no enemy. And that particular person, he comes to me without fail. So this particular verse captures the essence of what Krishna wants us to do and the essence of Gita. Srila Prabhupada writes, therefore, this verse is considered to be the essence of Gita. The Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, you can read the purport. And in this purport, we have this famous verse on page 539. Anya Vilashita Sunyam. Easy to remember. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1111. Anya Vilashita Sunyam. Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam. Anukulenya Kishnanu Shilanam. Bhakti Ruttama. Prabhupada goes into detail on what bhakti is, on pure devotional services. And then we just will wrap it up in 1 minute. Again, we'll read the summary for the benefit of those who have attended the class a little late. We turn to page 540, the last paragraph. Here, Prabhupada summarizes the entire 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In summary, the universal form of Krishna, which is a temporary manifestation, and the form of time, which devours everything, and even the form of Vishnu, four-handed, have all been exhibited by Krishna. Thus, Krishna is the origin of all these manifestations. It is not that Krishna is a manifestation of original Vishwarupa or Vishnu. Krishna is the origin of all forms. There are hundreds and thousands of Vishnus, but for a devotee, no form of Krishna is important but the original form, the two-handed Shamsundar. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that those who are attached to the Shamsundar form of Krishna in love and devotion can see him always within the heart and cannot see anything else. One should understand, therefore, the purport of the 11th chapter is that form of Krishna is essential and supreme. Yes.
And there is this connection made that this universal form that was shown is in the form of time. And also the universal form is in the atom, is in the cosmic manifestation. So what Keshav Bharati was referring to, as I was saying, Krishna has entered the atom in the form of time, we would think it's the universal form.
Ravananda Sakha Prabhu.
Prabhuji, regarding this last verse, Krishna has given a few points. One is... But in the end, he says, okay, first he says, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contaminations of fruitive activities and mental speculations, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. So why is he mentioning he who is friendly to every living being, as if, you know, one can have all the previous qualifications, but he may not be friendly to every living. Is that possible? That he is working for Krishna, he's free from fruitive activities, and he has this Krishna's supreme goal, but he is not friendly to every living being. Is that even possible? Otherwise, why is he mentioning Krishna?
Any answers? Anybody wants to answer? You want to answer? Okay, yes, it is possible. Yes. Yes.
So when he's a pure devotee, he is able to see Krishna everywhere.
Right.
So there's no way he could be, you know, he could be in animosity with anyone, right?
Nice, very nice. That's the point. And so we read also in the Ishopanishad. Yastu sarvani bhutani. Atma eva bhut vijanataha tatra ko moha kashoka ekatvam anupashyate. It is said in Ishopanishad also that he who sees every living entity as part and parcel of Krishna, and what is the source of lamentation or cause of anxiety for him? So the thing is, as we understand Krishna, we just realize that Krishna is not completely in himself. Everything belongs to Krishna. So when everything belongs to Krishna, and when all the activities which are happening are directed by Krishna, you don't see that happening as something which is impelled by that particular person. For example, a person may behave very harshly towards you, or a person is giving you consistent troubles. You don't see that person as enemy, because for one who has advanced in devotional service, he sees that through that person, Krishna is giving me suffering to either purify me, to test me, or just to let me undergo my past karma. But that advancement will take time in the preceding four steps. That is, mat karma krin, serve me. Then consider me as supreme. Do all those things. Then you will see that all these living entities, even though they may be troubling you, are actually not happening under their own control. It is me who is actually the cause of everything. So we see that person who is actually harassing you is not your enemy. So that's how he gives up enemy. For example, what the case in point is that Haridas Thakur, he was a Muslim. And then he started chanting the names of God. So the Muslim priest, he went and complained to Qazi, saying that this person is Muslim, he is just disturbing our faith, he is chanting these names of God. And then Haridas Thakur was ordered, you should not chant the names of God, you should stop chanting Hare Krishna. And then Haridas Thakur said, no, you cut my body into pieces and throw me into Ganges, still I won't stop chanting the names of God. So they were wondered what to do. So they said, we'll take him and beat him with lashes in 22 marketplaces. So there were about 8 to 10 strong, powerfully built persons who were taking Haridas Thakur, dragging him literally, and beating him with sticks in 22 marketplaces. That was his punishment. Now, as Haridas Thakur was being dragged into each marketplace, and when he was being hit by these soldiers, he was looking at them and he was feeling compassion for them. He was praying that, you know, these people, they should be delivered. Why? Why didn't he see them as his enemies? Because he knew this was happening by will of Krishna. And as they were beating him up, he was praying for their forgiveness. He was forgiving them and he was praying for their deliverance. So, so that stage is a little advanced. That doesn't mean that in the preliminary stages of devotion, one cannot just blindly tolerate or be exploited. That's another entirely a different topic.
we should, unless one has that sufficient qualification, one cannot simply exploit it, saying that, you know, happening by will of Krishna, that's okay. I'll do something. I'll do nonsense. That's okay. It doesn't work. We use our discrimination. At the same time, when we advance, we realize that, you know, it's happening through will of Krishna. So it works both the ways, based on where one is. Kishore had a very...
On his question about why Krishna is explicitly making that point, you have to be friendly to everyone. My understanding is that obviously the earlier qualifications of Mat Karma Kurun, Mat Paramo, he's engaged in Krishna's karma and he's treating Krishna as a supreme. And we would tend to think that he's friendly to everyone. But Krishna is giving the stress, be friendly to everyone. And that means you go and preach this message and give this knowledge to people. That is the best friendship you can, that is the best way of being friendly to everyone. So he's giving the stress or importance of giving it to others by saying explicitly, be friendly to everyone. That is my understanding.
Very nice. Thank you. Twenty-five minutes over time. Any other last questions? Any comments? Thank God. Good, we started at 2. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mathi. What's that? Yeah, no. No, 3, definitely we won't finish by this time.
No, we have to finish.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for attending. Hare Krishna.